My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another edition of Inside United. Today, again, we have Gary Petty. Welcome to Inside United, Gary.
It's good to be here again.
Gary has written a number of books, and his latest book is called The Mercy Effect, which is a spiritual guide for managing conflict.
Yes.
We have already discussed three previous chapters, and we'll go through chapter four, which is entitled Spiritual and Emotional Traps. The most difficult part of working through conflict is the emotions we experience, sometimes very irrational. So, Gary, that's what we want to talk about today. I'd like to get your insight on this.
The emotional part of us, and I think sometimes as men, we like to think we can just control all of our emotions and think everything through logically. But the truth is, we're all emotional beings, and we are influenced by our emotions, both for good and bad, more than we really like to admit. And one of the reasons why conflict can't be solved is because of the human emotions that are involved in it. So we have to be willing to look at those emotions. We have to look at the human processes and deal with the fact that every human being is dysfunctional in dealing with conflict, just to one degree or another. You may not be violent, but you're still not handling things the way they should be. So it's that emotional component that we ignore so much of the time.
Well, that's what we want to talk about today, is how to identify some of those emotions so that we can stop them cold, you know, before they become the dominant force and really force us to think defensively. And that's what we want to talk about today, so that we can have all these things out there in front of us and say, you know, how can we identify them and what's the best defense? Let's start with anger.
Well, all anger is not wrong. Now, even the Bible says to have anger, but sin not. Okay, so, but what we do with that anger and why we're angry is so important. So much of the time, we're not angry over a moral issue. You know, we should all get angry over injustice. We should all get angry when a strong person bullies a weak person. You know, that should make us angry. But so much of the time, we're actually angry because our pride is hurt, or we have to defend ourselves. And it's actually an internal reason. And because of that, we lose control of that anger, and we can feel motivated that justified in what we do, because the anger justifies it. I mean, how many people commit a violent act and say, well, it's because this person did this to me first? And it just keeps escalating. You know, your neighbor dumps their garbage and it blows over into your yard. So you go kill your neighbor's dog and they come over and burn your house down, you know, and it's just escalating and everything's justified because of this feeling that I shouldn't be treated this way, or I want my will to be done and my way to be done. And so we have this anger that takes out a wrong action. And a lot of understanding if the anger is good is, what is the action? What does it produce? Mm-hmm. I think that the greatest example in the Bible is Jesus, when he's with a group of Pharisees, and he's going to heal a man on the Sabbath. And the man has a withered hand. And the Pharisees are testing him because they're wanting to see if he heals this man on the Sabbath, he's breaking the Sabbath in their mind. And of course, it says he's angry. He looks at them and he's angry because, I'm about to do something good for this man, and you're here to condemn me. Now, his reaction is the exact opposite of what my reaction would have been. It says he looked at all of the Pharisees in anger, and I would have said, put out your hands, and I would have withered all their hands. Okay, I'll show you. Okay, Jesus was angry, looked at the man, said, hold out your hand, and healed him. In other words, his anger produced something good. And we have to ask a lot of times when we're in anger, we have to step back from it and literally be able to ask ourselves, what I'm about to do, is that good or is it bad? What's the product of what my anger is going to produce?
And you have to do the thing that you least feel like doing. The thing that you feel like doing is to retaliate in some way, or to show somebody up, or hurt them back. But what you're being asked to do is to do good to them. And that's why Christ, I guess, in his Sermon on the Mount, you know, made a point of that a couple of different times.
Yes. Well, and there's this sort of belief in our society that, and it's getting more and more common, that how you feel is what's correct. You define truth by how you feel. And, you know, when you look at the Bible, that's not how you define truth. Truth is defined by God. Mm-hmm. And truth is an objective thing.
Truth is truth.
Truth is truth. And our emotions, many times, to be a true Christian, we actually, as you just said, you actually have to go against the emotion that you have. You have to believe there's an objective standard of love that says, no, this is what I must do to love that person, even though they're making me angry, or even though they've done something wrong. That's not the issue. If we're controlled by other people, we'll be angry all the time. There's a point where we have to say, no, you can't control me. Therefore, I'm going to do what's right in spite of my hurt or my anger or, you know, this emotion that I have. It's a very difficult thing to do. And you see Jesus do it all the time.
Well, you see, you actually have more freedom when you go against the things that you feel because you're then in control. But if you are doing things because you're forced into it, you're doing things that actually enslave you even further with anger and actually wanting to do even worse things.
Now, there's the question of whether my anger is good or bad. You see, it's not like you pretend you're not angry. Stuffing anger is a very dangerous thing for us emotionally. But it's the ability to say, okay, I will do something right, and then I will approach and discuss this, but I will discuss it when I'm not out of control. Mm-hmm. But anger is real. I mean, Jesus did show his anger at times. And you see, though, whenever he's showing his anger, there's a moral principle. There's something wrong these people are doing in accordance with God's truth. You know, that's what's amazing. He goes into the temple, throws out the money changers. You know, that's a pretty angry act. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of a violent act because what they're doing is desecrating the temple of God. Yet while the people are killing him, he says, forgive them, God, because they don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So when there's this moral implicate, this moral thing that's happening, he stood up and he even showed some anger. But when it came down to how people were treating him personally, that's where he didn't show the anger. That's sort of the exact opposite of how we usually are.
Let's talk further about these constructive ways in which we can identify the fact that naturally we don't have to practice being angry. That just comes automatically.
Yeah.
But what types of practices do we have to be able to get beyond that and to be able to make something good out of an angry reaction?
You know, there's some scriptures I mentioned here in the book. Some of them, a lot of them are Proverbs. The desire of the righteous is only good. The expectation of the wicked is wrath. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the desire of the righteous, even in a conflict, is I'm hoping, my goal is good. Now, you can't always produce good because the other person won't let you. But okay, I'm angry, but my goal is to produce good. The expectation of the normal sort of human selfishness is you expect, you know, we're going to have a fight.
You want a good fight.
Yeah, we want a good fight. And so you have to, you know, you look through these and you start to see the practicality of it. He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly. I have to work with my temper because it's explosive and then it goes away. So that means before it explodes, I got to step away. Mm-hmm. You know, once again, there's a proper kind of anger and you sit down with somebody and you can say, you know, this really hurt me. This made me angry. And I just feel like I need to talk to you about that. Okay. But at that point, you're not, oh, you're a bully. I'm angry. I would like to punch you in the mouth. I mean, you've backed down from that. So that idea that we have to be slow to react when we're angry. A man of great wrath will suffer punishment. And for if you rescue him, he'll just do it again. Mm-hmm. You know, if we stay angry long enough, we'll just be angry over everything. We've all met people who just their main reaction to every problem is anger. That's not Christian. Mm-hmm. It's a hard trait. It's built into people sometimes through things they suffered through life. And they have to learn to step back from that and say, no, I can't. Okay, I feel anger. Why am I angry? That's a question you have to ask. Why am I angry? Mm-hmm. And then there's a very interesting proverb in Proverbs 22. It says, make no friendship with an angry man. In other words, if you hang out with angry people, you will begin to feel their anger. And, you know, I remember my grandmother telling me she was during the Great Depression. She was in a riot. There was a neo-Nazi rally because there was a Nazi party in the 1930s in the United States. She goes to see what's going on. And she said, there's all these people, the Nazi party there, then there's people that are against them. And they're arguing, fighting. And she said, a riot broke out. And she said, I got filled with such the excitement and the anger of everything. She says, I picked up a rock and threw it through a window. And she says, I have no idea why I did that. And she said, but it stopped because someone yelled, here comes the Rangers. And six Texas Rangers were walking down the street. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of people ran away. They just ran away. But
wasn't worth the fight.
Wasn't worth the fight, yeah. But it's very interesting because I remember as a child, she told me that a couple of times, how she says, I don't know what happened. I just got caught up in all this excitement and anger and stuff that was going on. And she says, I wasn't part of any of it. So if we hang out with angry people, and that's all we listen to, we will become more filled with anger. So we have to be careful about that.
Well, you know, this is the first part of July 2020. So the context of what we're in here is during a time of a lot of unsettled feelings, racial hatred, and that type of thing that has been very much in the news here. How much of that is real anger? How much of it is artificial anger? Or is it really anger? Are people who have been embroiled into somebody else's fight, so to speak, is it just the excitement of it all, or is it real anger really being hurt?
Well, there is racism.
Mm-hmm.
And if a person's a victim of racism, and they're going to have hurt, and that's going to lead to anger. You know, so much of anger is unresolved hurt. So that's a reality.
Okay.
So we look at that and say, no, that's a reality. There's anger there. Once again, though, as a Christian, our question is, what do we do with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have seen interviews with some protesters who aren't supporting the violence at all. They're out there for a real reason. We have a problem. We want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
They have a point to make, and they are voices worth listening to. Disagree or agree, it doesn't matter. They're worth listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have conversation here.
Mm-hmm.
But angry people take advantage of that and stir it up. And this sort of feeling of anger, it's like a spirit. It just overwhelms people. So to listen to the protesters who are against the violence, you will see them stand up against that anger, even though they have anger. They'll say, that kind of anger is wrong. So that's what we have to, as Christians, analyze. Where is it that my anger, once again, in the Proverbs, it produces good? Or is it an anger that's going to produce evil? Then I've just, instead of solving a problem, I've just become part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. The next trap that we could get into in conflict resolution, as a spiritual and emotional trap, is imputing motives. Tell us about that.
Someone does something to you, and it makes you angry, or it hurts your feelings. You don't understand it. So the first thing we tend to do is, you know why they did this? You know, and in your mind, you make up a reason. And now you will treat them and react to them as if that reason is true. What if it's not true? What happens is you escalate something that may not even be true. In other words, you may now be living a lie that's in your own mind. I really started to understand this when my wife, we'd been married a couple years, and one day she came out to me and she said, I had a revelation. She said, I thought you were doing something to me just to be mean. And I'm just oblivious. I'm just staring at her. And I'm thinking, I said, I don't know what you're talking about. She says, that's exactly right. She said, if you were a woman, you would understand what you're doing, but you're a man. So you have no motive at all because you don't even know what you're doing. And I said, I don't even know what you're talking about. And so she sat down and explained it. And after she explained it, I said, oh, well, if that bothers you, why didn't you tell me about it? She says, I know. She says, I just figured it out. I've been sort of getting angry and upset. I mean, she wasn't out of control or anything, but she says, it's been bothering me. And then I realized, you don't even know. You don't have this motive that you're doing this to me on purpose. So I said, oh, that's an easy thing to fix. And I don't remember what it was, but it sure was easy to fix.
Mm-hmm.
But she figured out that she could have started imputing a motive to me that would have made this very, you know, if you think somebody's doing something evil to you on purpose, we just think everybody's doing this to us on purpose. And you'll hear children say that all the time. They'll get in an argument. And one of the children, I hear my grandkids say this all the time. Oh, I didn't do it on purpose. Yes, you did. Yes, mm-hmm. you did. You did it on purpose. You did this because you hate me. Well, I don't hate you. And then that, it just keeps escalating.
Uh-huh.
Right? We had to find out what the real motive is. The motive may have been wrong. in which case you have to deal with that person's motive. You know, you did this because you hate me. You did this because you're prejudiced against me. You did this because you want to get back at me. You did, okay, whatever the reason is. But there's a lot of times when people, we're all just sort of stupid. You know, we just do stupid things. And a lot of times, oh, yeah, I remember doing that. You know, the person says, yeah, I had a toothache that day. I was grumpy towards everybody. Uh-huh. You say, now the motive is I have a toothache changes everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people will say things. And even if you look at the look of their face, it's like, why did I say that? That's not what I actually think.
But one thing too, Gary, is, you know, a conflict takes two parties.
Yes.
It takes this party that says, oh, you know, I'm imputing motives that at all. But we're talking, even though we're talking about the victim here, let's talk a little bit about the person who is being accused of having a motive. And sometimes they do have a motive.
Yes.
And so as part of being a Christian, maybe good exercise for us to take a look at what we do think about people. We may be holding things from the past against them. We may be saying things because of other factors, such as we don't like them for this or that reason. We could be jealous of them. We could be, you know, who knows what feelings we have and things that we don't even want to admit. But that's all part of creating this conflict. And then the other person who is the injured party then has to sort the good and bad out of it. So it takes both sides.
Yes, in fact, and there's a couple places in the book where I have a series of questions that you should ask yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be brutally honest. And that's why sometimes you have to pray about this. You have to go to God and say, I've had to do that. God, I have this anger towards this person. And what is my motive here? And there's been some times I've asked that because I can't figure it out. And I'll find out my motive is, I can think of one situation where the person said something pretty lousy about me to some other people. And they were wrong. But that doesn't justify this built-up anger that eventually was going to lead to me to treat that person the way I shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
If it bothers me that much, there's a point I should go talk to them. In this case, I thought about it and I thought, no, I'm a pastor. I should just try to help them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if I would have gone through that process, I would have begun, I know myself, this buildup this motive. When we hurt people and they come to us, we have to be brutally honest to look at our motives. Why am I doing this? And because our first inclination is always to justify ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a good reason. Do we? What is your reason? You'll see people that'll do this. Well, the problem is you have some people, and I deal with this in one chapter when I talk about antagonists, different levels of conflict. You have some people that they can't look at themselves because they truly believe they are always right.
Mm-hmm.
And in those kind of cases, there is nothing you can do. You can't solve the conflict because they will never look at themselves, or they'll say, I may be wrong, but let me tell you how you're acting wrong. They can never simply accept correction to themselves where they look at themselves and say, yeah, I have a wrong motive. Motives are so important. We can't impute a motive, but we have to be willing to look at our own motives.
I was once talking to a specialist. She handled all types of corporate squabbles. That was her thing. And she was a guest speaker at a very large convention that I was at. And she talked about the fact that when corporations kind of come to gridlock with teams working on projects, that one of the biggest things that had to be resolved was, what is this all about?
Yeah.
You know, they may say, well, they had this plan and they showed a strategic plan chart where they kind of didn't do what they should have done. But she said, when it really comes down to it, the ones that really were successful, the ones that said, you know something, I was just jealous of you. Or you were successful and I didn't want you to get past me. You know, I mean, they said that it really was something, but it's very hard. It's very hard because, you know, we as rational people who, you know, think in these terms, we block that out. We don't want to appear to others to be petty.
No, I'm offended.
You know, we don't want to appear that we are just that way.
Yeah.
And so really before God, we need to come and say, God, please help me see these very, very puerile, childish ways in which I respond.
And it's hard. It's very difficult, but this is what Christianity is. You know, Christianity isn't the outer person. The outer person is supposed to represent the inner person. So we can pretend But to get into the inner person is a very ugly place in all of us. And we have to let the light of God shine on that.
Anything else you want to say about imputing motives?
No, I think it's just so important we don't impute. And at the same time, it's so important that everybody, whether the offender or the person who is offended, you look at your own motives.
Gary, it's been really wonderful talking to you about this chapter. I have really appreciated your wisdom and your thoughtfulness in thinking through all these points, because it's not just bulleted points on a list, but it's points that have a lot of examples and a life's experience behind this. So thank you for joining us here on Inside United.
I always enjoy it.
Please write to us and tell us about what you think of this or any other podcast at podcast@ucg.org. Find us on the ucg.org homepage. Go to the main menu bar and click on podcast. You're right there. Also, you can subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app on Apple or Android and have it come to you weekly as we try to make these once per week. Also, we're on Spotify. We're now on Spotify. You can find us in the podcast section. And also, tell your friends to join us to our growing audience. So thank you. Thank you for joining us. Come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.